Welcome to this episode of Building Connections. And today I'm having a conversation with Jeffrey Saunders, owner of a company called Nordic Foresight and director of research for IFMA. Jeffrey, could you shortly introduce yourself and explain a little bit of what you've been doing and what you're doing today?
Oh, sure. No, I'm happy to do so. So I'm Jeffrey Saunders, CEO at Nordic Foresight and also director of research at IFMA, where I'm helping organizations kind of understand all the changes that are occurring in their surrounding environments and what does that mean for their strategies. So in the built environment context, is trying to understand the changing role that the built environment has in our lives, particularly as the world digitizes. So, and oftentimes it's, you know, what's the meaning of the physical in the digital age?
Right. I think that's going to be a great topic of our conversation today as well, of course. Now, I've been reading some of your research over the years. I think it's very impressive. You basically touch on very strategic elements of things that are happening, not only in terms of the physical infrastructure, but also political and social structures and so on. Now, you must have a very good view on how research in general is organized now in this world around the built environment, real estate management, facility management. So how do you see that world? Which are bodies that are basically taking stage in terms of research in the world? And how does IFMA relate to that? Could you say something about that?
Well, I mean, research ultimately is, trying to define the contours of development and try to articulate where's the surrounding world going? What does that mean for an industry like facility management, and how should organizations within the facility management industry position themselves to take advantage of these discussions? Now, of course, research could take many different areas of focus, just due to the sheer complexity of things that are going on. I mean, there's a variety of impacts or developments occurring in technology, how we're applying technologies in the built environment. What does the application of technology mean to how we interact with the buildings and with each other? And there's aspects around social elements, demographic change, aging, new user groups, and what do they think about what they want from their lives, and what do they expect the built environment to help them with as they try to live the way they're working. Then we have aspects related, of course, to the environmental challenges that we're all acutely aware of: climate change, waste, energy usage. All these aspects all have their key components, and that's just not only dealing with all the political and other types of challenges that we're dealing with. So it's about highlighting, key components of what is important to address. And then ultimately, for the research that I like to do is to help organizations navigate that, to understand what should they prioritize and how they should deal with these different challenges. So ultimately, it's highlighting issues that are important, and then providing insights about what organizations could do to mitigate these challenges and take advantage of opportunities.
Right. So in my mind, there's there's, of course, different players in the research industry itself. I think value of research is materializing when it's being adopted by practitioners. And how do you look at this handover situation? How's the state of handover from research to practitioners? How's the state of the world, so to say, today? What would be your assessment, and what should we probably or perhaps even do to improve that situation?
Well, I mean, it's that classic challenge that's been ongoing for forever. when you start talking about the academic oriented research versus commercial oriented research, and there's certain types of research which needs to be done because there's a knowledge building component that's important to the development of an industry or a practice. And because there are certain topics or conversations that don't always appear to be commercially relevant right now because it's hard to commercialize, but that doesn't mean that they're not important in the future. So it's always that balance between what are some things that are important because we're curious as animals, as creatures, we're curious by nature. So we want to understand how things work, and there's pure research that's important to do around that. And we don't know what the commercial applications of those are as of yet. And then there's that more aspect of the more commercially oriented types of research where the business case maybe for them might be more readily available or recognizable by industry, and they're more willing to take it up. And it's that kind of that balance. Now, if you take an organization like IFMA, for example, they're not going to compete with academic research institutions such as universities and things like that. However, they should be in my opinion, this is my personal opinion, is, identifying areas of research that have interest or for the broader industry and highlight the research that's going on in academia and bring that awareness to the industry and start having conversations about, well, how do we translate this? Because oftentimes when you're doing pure academic research, there's a language, there's a process that they do and a dialogue that occurs among researchers that isn't often accessible to non-academics. And so the question also time is to, highlight and start engaging in conversations about how do we engage others in this research, because it could be greatly important to them, but they just don't know how to access it.
So actually, would I put it right when I would say to your answer that if my research is actually part of that bridging between academia research into practitioners, practices that we play, that IFMA plays a role there to bridge it, right?
Right. No, there's a key element of playing a bridging function. There's also elements where, I come from, a foresight background. So I'm interested in the emergent fields, things that are on the horizon that are bubbling. They might be a few years out from commercialization, but they point towards important trajectories for the industry, and start engaging in conversations. Is this something that the industry should be engaged on at maybe an association level? Is this something, does it relate to policy, or does it relate to skills and development, or does it relate to just general knowledge that people should be aware of? Or is this something that is just going to be, a field for further commercialization that's going to be important because that's what members and others would like to have. So there's an aspect of highlighting new emergent areas. And then also, as you're saying, having that bridging discussion about bringing topics that are of importance to the industry as a whole and start right. engaging in the conversation about what does this mean? How could it be? And ideally, also potentially, how should it be translated into a practitioner context?
Right. So if I take the element of research, you look basically, if you state research is partly about looking into the future developments that may arrive, that may find a practice or a need of change for the industry itself. So in your view, how many years ahead are you in general in terms of research before some findings of research land into a change practice in, for instance, our facility management, the real estate industry? How far ahead are you typically in research?
Well, if you're into pure future studies and things like that, you're talking like sometimes 10, 15 years out. But I think for a lot of things that we're looking at, we're definitely closer to the horizon. And sometimes it's not that we're, years out and ahead of the industry. It's actually sometimes that it is bringing that awareness that these things are already going on in adjacent industries, yep. but facility managers and others should be taking this into account, should not be replicating them, the potentially the mistakes that were made, you know, when it was previously applied elsewhere. There were some of the lessons learned. Here's what some others have heard. How can we bring it in? That was, for example, the case that we had at World Workplace Europe in Amsterdam on the 1st and 2nd of June, when we had the research panel session on cybersecurity. So cybersecurity is not a new issue. If you look at what's going on in the maritime, critical infrastructure, related to energy, oil and gas, things like that, cybersecurity is something that's been a key issue for the last 15, 20 years or so. It's just that facility managers thought that, hey, you know, this is an IT related issue. And one of the learnings coming out of that is actually, no, this is operations technology. It runs on different protocols. IT departments don't really, you know, typically often in most organizations deal with this. And facility managers need to have a methodology and a framework in place so that they can ask the right questions of their vendors, be able to assess who's the proper vendor for dealing with this, and taking some of these lessons learned from other industries and seeing how to translate those into an FM context. And there is, you know, something that's, let's say, not many years out, but, you know, is something that needs to be addressed, because in this particular case, the digitization of operations and assets has been somewhat slower in the facility management space than it has been in other industries.
Right. But by this case, you by nature already roll into what's important elements of research. I would like to dwell a little bit around this subject, because I was at the World Workplace in Amsterdam as well, in the same session, actually, very learning experience. What I took away from that is this thought that was being expressed about that you can effectively model the kind of threats on the one side that basically would basically be there around a building, because they do it for ships as well. So a building is just a non-floating ship, perhaps. but also plan your mitigation actions for when events happen, because one of the takeaways is that you cannot prevent anything happening, but you can prepare to deal with consequences when something happens. Now, what came in my mind, actually, on that topic of cybersecurity, is that there would be some starting point for modeling that kind of thing as a generic model for all buildings, and helping the profession to deal with that in a more practical way, give them some practical guidelines.
Yeah, no, I think that's something that we're looking to explore and unfold. And there's, you know, emergent research areas around that. And now we're trying to see what can we bring from those emerging research areas. How can we harness some of the information that's coming out from the various cybersecurity agencies, things like that have been providing guidance to industry, and then trying to see how we could translate that to a built environment facility management context. And then as you're talking about, you know, oftentimes there's that discussion around, you know, resiliency, business continuity planning. Many people make the mistake of, or my opinion, the mistake of trying to assess what all the risks are out there and trying to predict them all. And, you know, I feel that that's, you know, you can never fully know what all those, you know, predict all those potential vulnerable, you know, what all those particular events are going to be. But you can start talking about what types of vulnerabilities do you have, and what type of stopgap measures can you put into place to block some of those events. So that's what Sean Reardon's presentation in taxonomy that he was bringing up was looking at some of these key kind of critical events that have, you know, fundamental impacts to the operations, to the business, to the building, and trying to see what can we mitigate in that, and try to put those mitigation features in place, because there's going to be vulnerabilities along those chains. But if we have the right stop measures in place, then we could stop them from occurring. And I think that there's, as you're rightly saying, there's some generic ones for buildings. I mean, just like a ship, you know, even the same class of ship is its own kind of meta system of all different types of systems and technologies that are unique to that ship. Same thing for a building, the whole cycle of the building, the life cycle, the breakages of parts, the replacement of parts and systems means that each building becomes unique. However, there's certain generic areas that all buildings share that could be addressed. And then you can have conversations with the asset owner to start talking about, and also the occupiers, about what is critical for them in the operations of their business and how best to protect that.
Yeah. Okay. Effectively, this case that we're talking about today, or at this moment, it's actually also something that calls for collaboration between FM and IT, I guess, and the cybersecurity people in IT as well, putting this on their as a collaborative problem rather than just moving it into the IT world, I guess.
Exactly. I mean, the complexity of business is becoming as such that you're not talking about one man or a team of facilities just dealing with these problems. It's that ability to work in teams, integrating people with operations technology and IT technologies background, cybersecurity and the like, and bringing that together, and then having recommendations on process, on methodologies, on frameworks, on questions that people should be asking so that they can identify the right partners and vendors and everything like that to work with. I mean, that's just the nature of things that it's getting to a degree of specialization and degree of sophistication that you just can't expect a one or two or three man team to be able, or person team to be able to handle all these issues. As buildings become increasingly technically sophisticated, that requires a certain set of competencies. But if you think about the aspects on the other demand side for facility managers in the built environment is on occupant behavior, a more of the softer side of facilities management, where you start getting into more anthropological, sociological components of understanding how users are doing. And those also call for different skill sets. So that ability to work in a team around these issues will become increasingly important.
Yeah, becomes a competence almost, I think.
Yes.
Yes. When you move this to the more physical infrastructure side and system side, in terms of this cybersecurity, do you see anything developing in terms of certification types that the FM and IT will be looking at in terms of systems they acquire, requirements on certain certifications that basically guarantee some level of cybersecurity capability in these products or not?
Well, I'm not a subject matter expert in cybersecurity. I think it's a key critical component moving forward, just because if you look at the rapid digitizations of assets and operations, and seeing the experiences that have occurred over the last 15 years in other industries, and having also worked for government agencies that have been hacked in the United States, yeah, and having my background information be exposed because of that, has made me keenly aware of the importance of this. And so to link up with the experts who say this is how best to do it, and following their recommendations and guidelines around that. So that's part of the reason why I brought together that team of cybersecurity experts and also building environment experts that are conversant in cybersecurity, and start talking about how do we address these issues? What are the educational requirements, the certification requirements that will come up? And again, with like many things, we want a degree of accreditation about the competencies that people have. So this requirement that people have certifications, micro degrees, and things like that they can continually upgrade their skill sets upon, that will become important. And I definitely see within FM a need for more technically oriented IT, OT oriented, cybersecurity oriented certifications coming forward.
Great. Now, let's go to another area of research. Actually, I'm wondering, What is in your, what's your agenda? What do you think, what kind of research is today ongoing? What do you see as important research areas to step into for real estate and FM in the future? Can we have a, can you basically talk about some of the things that you're working on today, what you think is going to be important in the future?
Sure. I think, well, I mean, I think there's some broad, there's some contours I think that, you know, consistently come back to. One is, you know, of course, you know, the whole aspect around how the integration of digital technologies transforms operations, how we use assets, how we think about our assets, the built environment and things like that. I think that that's a fundamental component moving forward that drives most, you know, most topics of conversation. I think that's a key conversation to be having. And I think that it leads to a conversation about the building as an interface with users. Yeah. And what does that mean? So, you know, you have the aspects that's, you know, ongoing. I had conversations earlier today and previously at Facility Fusion, where we're looking at the automation of receptions, for example, where you have digital avatars and digital humans that people are communicating with when they enter a workplace. That's on the customer facing side of things. But those are, there are also elements of the employee experience aspect where people are also starting to integrate with digital humans. And the building starts communicating both with facility managers and building owners and operators, but they also communicate with end users through apps about, you know, individualized control over the building. So what does the, you know, the building as an interface mean for the people and the facility managers that are using it? I think that's a very interesting component of research moving forward. And then of course you have the questions that come into it. How do we secure it? How do we do the data collection in the right way so we can trust the data and then actually use it in a way that can help us with predictive and prescriptive and other types of and diagnostic analytics.
Can I just go circle back to what you just were saying? It's, I think it's a very interesting topic, the digital human as a as a an entity to interface and interact with as a human. I think it's a very new field that we're moving into. And speaking from my mind, I have some, let's say, I won't say reservations, but I have some thoughts around ethics around this. And as you said, you put in new things into our environment and you have to experience, you have to learn from what's going well and what's not going well. So how do you look at the generic topic of ethics when you're introducing these almost human-like machines, so to say? Is there any thought in your mind, a guideline? Is what's the line not to cross? What's the line that you can, what's the playing field that is ethical still?
Well, this is an aspect I think is quite interesting to get into because the industry is not addressing these issues. It hasn't been, and you know, this is a what we see before when you start talking about on the one side part of the industry, you know, particularly the ones that are talking about more workplace experience, talk about the importance of trust and distributed working. The organization has to trust the workers and conversations about that. But during the pandemic, the biggest explosion in one of the biggest explosions in technology of related to remote workers, for example, was on what's called bossware, which is simply tracking technologies that track employee behavior online. So, you know, when you're working with their laptops or on their smartphones, if it's a company provided smartphone, what apps are people using? You know, how often are they switching between programs? A number of these different technologies are, really in intimate detail, talking about what people are doing on a minute by minute basis. And we haven't been addressing, you know, is that the right thing to do? How should it be done? And, you know, if you start talking about these other technologies that are rapidly pouring into the industry. So, you know, it's not just about I come in, I see a digital avatar and I start talking to that, and that has its, you know, whole set of ethical considerations. There's the considerations around, you know, touchless voiceless touchless voice oriented interfaces. There's aspects around some of the technologies that are coming out about, you know, taking the you know, kind of location monitoring technologies that people could do through, organizations could do through, you know, Wi-Fi with people's smartphones, and then also with people's RFID badges, you know, where you could do incredibly potentially, you know, powerful, but also potentially intrusive monitoring of people. And we kind of, you know, look at it from an ick factor, but not really addressing how we should do it, as, you know, should we be doing it? One, and question two, how we should be doing it in a responsible way. And if we take the ESG discussion, which is, I think, another big area that we need to address, we're very focused on the environmental component of, you know, carbon, energy usage, waste management, and those are all interrelated. But we're not talking about the social and the governance component, particularly start talking about how we're going to be using these technologies, you know, in our interaction with people in the built environment, whether they're end users or they're the employees operating in the environment.
And effectively, to your point, because you're mentioning the built environment, if we take the, let's say, the base product of built environments, workplace, and going into the hybrid world of workplace, it's distributed, it can be at home. So for us, the common denominator of the workplace is the digital workplace. So the tool set you bring along in your laptop or whatever phone or whatever device you're carrying along between these physical places, which actually is allowing you to do your work, for instance, it's Teams, it's Zoom like we used to now, and that kind of tool sets. The thing about it, to your point, is because you mentioned data as well and reliability and usability of data. By nature, by us using these tool sets, we build up this massive information network of who's connected to who, who's working with whom, on what kind of topic. And so there's effectively for organizations, it's a potential gold mine, of course. But that also has its limits in terms of privacy, and some in Europe it's more than in other regions of the world, perhaps. Still, it's something, it has to do something with the same thing. There's a certain area where we can basically move in and around, but there's probably also some limits or not. Is that something that you're looking at as well? Where is the humanistic side of the use of technology and data? Where should we go and where should we not go?
It's definitely a personal interest of mine. You know, it's a question of putting the right group of experts around the table to address it. And that's some of the things I'm exploring right now, how best to do that and structure that process. But I think it's something that's incredibly important to address. I mean, the interest in linking all these data sets together is quite powerful, because the question that's been driving research in particularly talking to workplace context is what makes a knowledge worker productive, and when and how are they most productive and with whom? And we never really had granular data that we could use to say much about when people are productive in a very scientific or not scientific, but rigorous way. And now with these technologies, there's the hope that will be able to help us address some of those questions. And that's a driving motivation for many researchers, particularly in the workplace management field. And there's a hope that these technologies will be able to say something much more powerful under when, where, and how, and under what context people are productive. When are they feeling stressed? What types of stress are they susceptible over for? And those are very powerful insights that could help a lot to make people, you know, more happy and productive at work. Now there's some, you know, other sides of it, which can be quite troubling. And those are the cases that, you know, we're coming around up and around 2018, 19 and 20, where you're looking at warehouse workers and people in logistics and things like that, where they all of a sudden were employing these monitoring technologies to create really, in certain cases, you know, almost robotic working environments for people where they couldn't even take a break to go to use the restroom. And if they were slower than, you know, their other colleagues, they'll get, you know, automatic warnings and automatic termination notices. And, you know, that, you know, kind of dark side of automation in knowledge work definitely is out there. And I'm not, I'm not so optimistic to say those technologies will not happen and be implied in unsavory ways in a knowledge work environment. You know, if there's an ability to do it, there'll be actors who will do these things. And I think that we should, you know, have those conversations about how do we, you know, mitigate that and what is the position that we should do if we take ESG seriously. What do we mean for the social and governance sides of these questions? I think they need to be addressed.
Right. Thank you. Well, we're almost getting to the end of this conversation today, Jeff. But as a last question, when real estate FM managers are going to need to look into the future, need to basically, of course, be aware of what's coming. What's your advice to them? How to basically keep informed about what's coming next, so to say? What's your take?
Yeah, I mean, there's this wealth of information coming out, exploding out about what we can do, and what's the cool insights about all sorts of new and interesting things that can be done in the built environment, but not enough questions being asked about what should be done, what's value adding, and what makes a better life for the many people who are using these spaces, and how should they, you know, interact and with them, and what implications does this have for the workers in the communities in and around our buildings? So I'm quite interested also in the developments around community-based and urban FM, for example, which look not only about the buildings in isolation and what does that mean, but its integration into neighborhoods and the communities around it, and asking some questions about what are not only the economic value of what we're trying to achieve, but also what are the social values that we're trying to address with our buildings. And then, of course, you know, we have the whole environmental challenge ahead of us, which is, you know, how can we reduce our reliance on fossil fuels? How can we improve the operations of our buildings and still have them be comfortable for people to use? And how do we kind of close the loops on many of on the ways that we use buildings and then disassemble them for future reuse? I mean, there's a whole wealth of opportunities to go down into and avenues to explore. So it's quite an interesting time to be working in this space.
Right. I think that's a great last comment on your side. Thank you very much for the conversation today and your time given to that. Thank you for listening in and watching this episode of Building Connections. See you next time. Thank you. Thank you, Jeff. It was a pleasure.
Thank you so much, Eric. Always a pleasure.